is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. And today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney. I'm down in Florida. We are preparing for an exhibition broadcast we have of a game between the Yankees and Mets. Sean Bartley's in California. And Sean, I apologize for the way that our Sunday played out. We were actually going to tape a podcast on Sunday evening to be published on Monday morning, but it was one of those days where you have de-icing and delays and extra connections. And, you know, I left my home at 4 a.m. and I wound up checking in the hotel at about 10:30 last night. So all those plans were blown up for this week. And I apologize because you were kind of, you know, like a flag whipping in the wind of all that crap.
Oh, man. Buster, it is perfectly fine, man. I'm just glad that you made it to Florida okay in one shape, you know?
Yeah, and so the way this is going to affect our schedule, we talked about, I mentioned we have an exhibition broadcast on Tuesday, and then we have another one on Thursday. And so this week, our podcast schedule is such that we're going to publish on Tuesday, and then we're going to have another one on Thursday and another one on Friday. And I teased before, we're going to get Albert Pujols. We're scheduled to get him on Wednesday night, and that'll be for the podcast on Thursday morning. Yeah, Sean?
Absolutely, man. I'm really looking forward to the Albert show. You know, I grew up watching him play with him on a few video games. So that Wednesday show is going to be big, or Thursday show is going to be big.
Yep, exactly. So that's what the schedule is going to be for the rest of the week. We have really big news today. Zach Wheeler has signed a record-setting extension with the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll be talking with David Schoenfield and Sarah Langs about that. And today we'll have team previews for the San Diego Padres with Anthony Gwynn and the Houston Astros with Steve Sparks. And we'll get some storytelling from Bob Kendrick, the president of Negro Leagues Museum. We've already taped that interview. I think he lived up to my hype when we taped this, Sean. I told you going into it, like, there's no better storytelling than Bob.
Yeah, you told not one lie with that. You know, Bob had a role in the entire interview. He just really paints a story when he's telling me what's going on. So great job.
I wanted to throw him a curveball on a particular player, and man, he just crushed it. And it was like he was anticipating it the way it played out.
He read your mind. He knew.
Yeah, he knew. He was all over it. All right, some details on Zach Wheeler's contract. 3 years, $126 million, an average salary of $42 million a year. There's no deferred money. There's no backloaded or anything like that. It's just straight up $42 million in 2025, 2026, 2027. The largest extension ever for any player when you talk about average annual salary. And by the end of the year, he'll also have 10-5 no trade rights. Now, the other day, the Giants and Matt Chapman agreed on a $54 million deal. It's a 3-year contract structured very similarly to what Cody Bellinger got. He can opt out after this year. He could potentially opt out after 2025. Ronald Acuna Jr. underwent an MRI that revealed irritation in his right knee. According to the team, he will meet with Dr. Neil Elitrosh in Los Angeles on Monday, and you would assume on Tuesday we're going to learn more about that injury. I'm going to be talking about that with David Schoenfield coming up. The Red Sox's Vaughn Grissom hurt his groin. He's unlikely to be available for opening day. He, of course, was the centerpiece of the deal for the Red Sox that saw Chris Sale being traded to the Atlanta Braves. Sean, what else you got?
We got College Game Day podcast coming up this week. Be sure to check that out wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
The show, David Schoenfield, covers baseball for ESPN. Dave, how you doing today?
I'm good, Buster. I'm recovering from hosting a panel at the Sloan Conference over the weekend.
Nice. So, what was the panel you hosted?
We had a baseball analytics one. We had a guy from the Rays, Jonathan Ehrlichman, who actually has been a coach the last 5 years. Somehow I was unaware that they had an analytics coach sitting on the bench next to Kevin Cash. He's moved into a new role this year. So that was interesting. And then a guy from the Dodgers analytics department and Carlos Pena, from MLB Network, former, you know, first baseman. He was fantastic.
Yeah. The problem with Carlos is he's got to turn up the energy. You know,
he has no energy. He carried the rest of the panel. That's for sure.
Oh, he's so great.
I mean, he's studying AI at NYU. He's taking classes. He wants to learn more. You know, he was a computer engineering major at Northeastern. So, unique, wonderful individual.
Yeah, and the Rays employee within the next 5 years will either be a manager in the big leagues or a general manager. I think we can pencil him in too. Yes.
Yeah, put him in that pipeline. He's working on special projects. He wouldn't divulge, but I'd love to know what the Rays' special projects are.
Yeah. Speaking of former Rays or, you know, people in the Rays pipeline, I one of those random moments when I landed here in Florida last night, you know, dragging two bags late at night, you know, the connection problems, all kinds of end of the day. And I get on the rental car shuttle and who steps on but Chaim Bloom.
Yeah.
He's down here and he's, you know, jumping on. He's going to do work with the Cardinals. So that was fun to see him. All right. So if it was a fun day in Phillies camp. They held a press conference announcing Zach Wheeler's extension. 3 years, $126 million. It's the highest average annual value for any contract extension in the history of baseball, $42 million a year. And yet it doesn't feel like a surprise to me, Dave. I assumed, just in the way that I assume that Alex Bregman's going to be a free agent, I assume that Zach Wheeler would work it out with the Phillies. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, Buster, there's such a good vibe, you know, in that clubhouse on that team. I was down there in Tampa for a couple days at the start of the spring training, and, you know, the hitters were all reporting early. You know, they all wanted to get there and get going. You know, some of them lived out in the area and so on, but they were, you know, rearing up to get back. Yeah, obviously, they re-signed Aaron Nola, and now they get Wheeler, so it's the same team as last year. That's a team that's good enough to win it all.
Yeah, I was talking with Hembo a couple times last week about, or maybe a couple times this spring, we've talked about the Phillies, and some of the over-unders are like 89, 90. I talked to one team that has internal projections with them at 86. I'm looking at the Phillies saying, man, that is a great team.
Yeah, it's weird that they haven't won more games the last couple of years. But then you look at last year, Bryce Harper, when did he come back? End of May, you know, and then he didn't hit for any power at all the first half of the year.
Right.
Trey Turner, you know, really struggled the first half before he turned it on. Even Schwarber and Real Muto, I think they had a little bit of a World Series hangover. They got off to slow starts. You know, but on the other hand, a lot of those guys are now entering their 31, you know, age seasons, a couple older guys, you know, so maybe they're not all going to perform at a high level for 6 months, but it feels like a team that could certainly win 95 games.
We also got news in recent days. The San Francisco Giants agreed to a 3-year, $54 million deal with Matt Chapman. It's a deal structured in a very similar way to what Cody Bellinger got with the Cubs. I must say that last fall, when some of the projections were coming out on Chapman, you know, that had him in the, you know, mid-100s for the contract, I was shaking my head. I'm like, that did not at all match what I was hearing from individual evaluators with teams where they're like, yeah, really good defender. You know, he's had an excellent career. He could definitely help out a pitching staff, but they were worried about the offense. And so kind of like with Bellinger, I get it. I get why he wound up getting, you know, a third of what some projections had him at.
Yeah, Buster, I've looked at his numbers from last season and they're so hard to evaluate. Of course, he was great in April, player of the month, then really slid off. He strikes out a lot, but his exit velocities are absolutely elite, 98th percentile. He just had trouble hitting the ball in the air after April. So I think there's some feeling that maybe he can rebound. On the other hand, he struggled against big velocity, wasn't hitting, you know, 95 plus. And if he can't hit 95 plus in this day and age, you're in trouble. There's a floor with that defense. I think he's going to help the Giants, no doubt, but I'm with you. I'm not surprised he didn't get a $100 million deal.
No, he's, 165 strikeouts, 170 strikeouts in recent years, you know, hitting in the, you know, below 250. And what you've seen during the course of his career is he hits for power. But as you said, you know, one evaluator said to me, I've never seen anybody swing through fastballs right down the middle more than he has.
Yep.
And I think that's part of the reason why there was such reticence in the market. There's a report out there that the Blue Jays offered him 6 years, $120 million. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think that what the Giants offered him is closer to what a lot of teams felt about him. In fact, I remember having conversations with some of those evaluators saying, hey, do you think he should take the qualifying offer? You know, could he potentially be a candidate for that? And on an annual basis, that's kind of where he landed, you know, with his average salary. And it, you know, just like with Bellinger, it's good that he got the opt-out after the first and second year, because if he goes out and has a big year, then he potentially could cash in.
Look, I know Scott Boras can sit there and complain that the players aren't getting the money. But in the end, Buster, there have been so many bad free agent deals. You know, teams will they'll give the money for the superstars, the Harpers and Otanis, and Yamamoto looks like he's going to be at that level. But there was just so much risk involved with a Bellinger or a Chapman or even, you know, Blake Snell, Montgomery. Like, why give them that money? I know in the end, teams have done it. You know, that's what was the expectation was for Scott Boras. But I think teams just got smarter than they have been.
You're right. And there have been some mistakes. The Yankees, you know, if Carlos Rodon doesn't bounce back, you know, they'll be probably kicking themselves given his injury history that he had in the past. I'm thinking of Patrick Corbin, you know, the Nationals spending bigger than what people expected at that time. And Chris Bryant, right?
Yeah, Chris Bryant, Steven Strasburg, even some of the shorts, Xander Bogaerts. He's still a good player, but after 1 year, he's moving to second base. You know, you gave him $280 million because you thought he was going to be your shortstop.
All right. We got news out of the Atlanta Braves camp. Do you want to go with the good news or the bad news first?
Well, unfortunately, I think we might have to start with the bad news, Buster.
Yeah, Ronald Acuña Jr. with a knee issue. What do you think?
Who knows, right? I mean, obviously, we saw the difference from 2022 when he was coming back from his knee surgery in 21. You know, good player, but not that explosive Ronald Acuña. We saw him healthy last year, have an absolutely historic season. So who knows what it means? I think at the minimum, even if he is back and ready for opening day, he's not going to steal 70 bases again. Why are the Braves going to risk that?
Yeah, and here's what we heard all last year about Acuña was that he took a huge step from 2000 and, you know, pre-knee injury Acuña to what he was last year because he had confidence in a healthy knee, right? Yeah. That he was feeling better about it in the second year after having surgery. Well, now who knows? You know, who knows what he's feeling? Who knows if this is something that's going to drag on during the year? Is he going to need a procedure to clean it up? And it just, reminds me a little bit, and being older, I can make these comparisons to when you heard about Mickey Mantle, you know, hurting his knee in the 1951 World Series, right? Hitting the sprinkler head, or excuse me, 1950 World Series. And you're just like, oh, man, I hope it's not that kind of situation because Acuña is such a dynamic player.
Yeah, you know, the thing he did last year offensively, he cut his strikeout rate way down. I've never seen a player cut his strikeout rate so much from one season to the next. What was it, 15%? That's almost elite, you know, especially for a power hitter. So how, to your point, how much of that was the confidence? And now that confidence may be lacking, or how much of it was just, you know, a mature approach and a learning curve? So maybe he still hits this year and doesn't run. That's maybe the best case scenario.
The Braves were confident when they traded for Chris Sale that he was healthy, and what we're seeing this spring sort of backs that up, Dave.
Yeah, two great outings so far. What, 5.2 scoreless innings, I think, something like that. I saw a little bit of his second outing. Look, he's been hurt so often we forget, even the last 4-plus years, when he's been on the mound, he's been pretty good. Not the Chris – the dominant Chris Sale of, you know, 2013 to 2018. But I don't see why he can't be a very nice number two starter. You know, now you're going to want to limit his innings, probably give him a couple breaks during the year because you want him healthy in October. But I love that trade at the time, and early returns look positive.
All right, and last one before you go. On the flip side of that Chris Sale trade, Vaughn Grissom. He suffers a groin injury. He's not going to be ready for opening day. And there has to be some kind of feeling in the Red Sox organization like, oh, my God, the hits just keep on coming.
Yeah, well, that's been their par for the course the last couple of years, keeping everyone healthy, you know, especially obviously on the pitching staff. I like that trade, you know, at the time for both teams. I thought it was a win-win. I think Grissom, you know, he wasn't a shortstop, but he's not playing shortstop for the Red Sox. He was going to be their second baseman. Hopefully it's just, you know, a week or two at the start of the season. I think he's going to be a good player.
All right, Dave. Well, thanks for doing this, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, Buster. Thanks.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Warm up with the hottest games live with Vivid Seats. No matter the sport, Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you can score free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, an annual birthday discount, and more. They're the only ticket company in the game that rewards fans for every purchase. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
0096.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, of course, a reporter and producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how are you doing on this Monday?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm writing these team previews and putting those together. And I must say, so often I look at your predictions and I'm like, you know, Sarah's a really nice person. Okay? And like I was looking at the prediction, we're going to have this later on, the Oakland Athletics prediction, yours is a much nicer number than mine is. And I'm trying to figure out, I think part of that might be not you being nice, but the fact that a lot of the sort of the numbers analysis tends to work toward the middle. The extremes are not something that you're necessarily going to think about.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't have it in front of me, but their Pocodina number was actually much higher than I expected to be. I do think there are elements of their roster. Again, we're talking the 50s and 60s. We're not talking about high numbers. But to your point, there is a tendency, certainly by me, and I'll also say with stats, with models, to not go to those extremes, as you said.
Yeah, I remember once when the Nationals were tanking back in the early 2000s, writing where I had one executive say to me, you know, they might not win 40 games. The 62 Mets are in trouble. And Ryan Zimmerman not being happy with that comment by one executive. He was like, well, that person doesn't know baseball, because baseball doesn't work that way, right? The old saying is you start every season with 54 wins and 54 losses, and then it's what you do in the other 54 games that will determine how your season is going to go. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 19.3. So with Zach Wheeler's new extension with the Phillies, I want to remind everyone just how good he has been for them. And he has been exactly as advertised. He has been exactly what they would want out of any pitcher on their staff. 19.3 is his WAR on Fangraphs since the start of 2020, since he joined the Phillies. That is more than one win above replacement better than any other pitcher in baseball in that span. Corbin Burns is next, then Kevin Gausman, and then Aaron Nola, which is interesting with them both now being locked up on that staff. You know, I don't often present numbers without context, but I think his stats, what he has done with the Phillies so far, you don't even need a comparison to know this is good. The 306 ERA, 101 start, 106 whip, and in the postseason, this is what has truly made him valuable, even though it isn't in that WAR number. A 2.42 ERA in 11 games, 1 relief appearance in 10 starts, and 0.73 whip, which is the best in postseason history, with a minimum of 50 innings.
Number two.
Number two is three. So we have coming up on Tuesday on ESPN, the Mets and the Yankees in the spring training game. And I always love when they find a note they didn't find throughout the year. And all of a sudden it's March, I'm looking back at the season and realize there's something I missed. And this is what I missed about Francisco Alvarez, who he had 4 multi-home run games last year. 3 of those were while he played catcher. His 3 multi-home run games as catcher are the most by any catcher since at least 1900 before turning 22. And the only other guy to even have 2 of those is Bill Frams. And then we have 5 guys who have 1 each, Joe Mauer and Dale Murphy, Mitch Weingart, Hank Rozowski, and Chanty Hogan. So just really incredible what he has done from power standpoint, and doing it while playing behind the dish is so notable.
Number one.
Number one is, we'll go 56%. So Matt Chapman's hard hit rate last season was 56.4%. That was the highest in baseball with a minimum of 300 batted balls. And any Giants fan will tell you that post-Bonds, the team has been disturbed for that power hitter. We talked about this with Jorge Soler. We have it with Chapman as well. And the highest hard hit rate for a player on the Giants under Statcast, which now goes back 10 years to 2015, with that same minimum 300 batted balls, was J.D. Davis last year at 45.2%. Matt Chapman was more than 10% points better than that. And his barrel rate was 17.1%, the highest for a Giants player in the season. Under Statcast was Brandon Crawford in 2021, 11.5%. So this offseason, they met a guy with a 17% barrel rate, and Chapman a 15% barrel rate in Jorge Soler. I love this more than John. And I love the reunion aspect with Matt and Chapman and Bob Melvin.
Yeah, I'm really curious how Matt, and I'm, you know, next time we have the Giants on television, I think we have him on a couple times this in the first half of the season. I'm really curious about, you know, how he sort of processes the strikeouts and the hard hit rate and how he views all that, or if he does. I mean, for all I know, Sarah, and I haven't talked to Matt about this, you know, maybe he's a player who just doesn't like the data, right? I don't know, but he has one of the more interesting, as you know, has one of the more interesting sets of data attached to him where you could, it's like a, what do they call that? A Rorschach test. How do you pronounce that?
Yeah, a Rorschach test. Yeah.
Right, where you look at an object, it's open to interpretation.
Absolutely.
As to what it is. All right, before you go, I was going to mention, we talked about Zach Wheeler. I was reminded of a few years ago, you know, he gets this massive extension. A few years ago, I had heard from other teams that the Phillies were kind of the front office at that time before Dave Dombrowski took over. They were kind of poking around the marketplace and saying, look, we might be willing to listen to offers for Zach Wheeler. And I heard this from multiple teams, so I knew it was true. And I reported that, and John Middleton reached out to me, the owner of the Phillies, and he gave me one of the best quotes I've ever had, which is that he would never trade Zach Wheeler forever, first off. And he said, wouldn't trade him for Babe Ruth. I wouldn't trade him for Ted Williams. And that tells you a little bit about how good Zach Wheeler is, Sarah.
Yes, I remember that quote. I'm so glad you brought that up. But you know what? He has proven that. He has shown it time and again for them. And my favorite thing for him is I love when a player is able to change the entire thought process around them, the narrative that surrounds them. When he was in New York, his first few years, it was all about injuries, the seasons he missed. And he was so good in those final two seasons. But even so, the question was, will he stay healthy? Will he be able to do this again? And he's been one of the most reliable and good stars in that span. Not just he's been good, he's been out there throwing a ton of innings and showing why he deserves this. So I just love that. I mean, there are kids in Philly who don't remember the narrative about Zach Wheeler being this injury-riddled starter for the Mets. I love that for him.
All right, Sarah. Good to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 Team Preview. San Diego Padres, machinations.
The late owner, Peter Seidler, gave the go-ahead for the Padres to push their payroll to unthinkable levels in recent years. And in the first season after the death of the beloved Seidler, San Diego is taking its payroll down significantly. Juan Soto and Trent Grissom were traded to the Yankees for young and cheap pitching, and the Padres opened spring training with major questions about their rotation and outfield depth.
The Foundation.
Given the top-heavy nature of their roster, the Padres will only go as far as their highest-paid players will take them. Manny Machado had an adjusted OPS plus of 115 last year. The Padres need more. Xander Bogaerts compiled an OPS of 790. The Padres need more as he shifts to a new spot at second base. Yu Darvish had a 4.56 ERA in 24 starts last season. San Diego needs more.
A guy to watch.
Michael King, the centerpiece of what the Padres got in return from the Yankees for Soto, had a strong finish to last year. In six starts from August 29th to September 26th, he allowed just four earned runs in 31 and two-thirds innings for a 1.44 ERA with only seven walks and 44 strikeouts. Perhaps a sign he could have an immediate impact for San Diego.
Win projection.
Pecota has the Padres finishing fourth in the National League West with 80.5 wins. I've got them at 76 wins and attempting a midseason sell-off of tradable assets. Hembo has them at 76 wins. Sarah Langs has them at 79.
Anthony Gwynn is an analyst on the Padres radio network. And Anthony, I got to start with this as I always do. I call you Anthony because I think your dad would yell at me if he heard me call you Tony Gwynn Jr. So I apologize in advance. But I told you, he yelled at me once for writing your grandfather's name different than what he wanted.
Yeah, no, you know, most folks who were around my father growing up knows that that's what he called me, was Anthony. So it's all good by me.
Okay, excellent. All right, the 2024 Padres, a very different team, a very different winter. You know, they were the big winners of last winter. You know, you had folks like myself picking them to win the World Series. But this year, in the aftermath of Peter Seidler's passing, it's a different payroll, maybe different expectations. What's got to happen in your mind for the Padres to win this year?
I think Fernando Tatis has an MVP type season. I think Manny Machado returns back to the offensive juggernaut he is. I think Xander Bogaerts picks up where he's been out most of his career. I think Jake Cronenworth has a bounce back season. And so, you know, as you start naming some of these names, these are certainly things that could certainly happen during the 2024 season. And most years you would expect those guys to produce at a high level. So I think those things would certainly have to happen. I think Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove also have to be Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove.
So Fernando Tatis Jr., when he started his career, you know, we were thinking, boy, he's going to put up absolutely monster numbers. The beginning of last year, I remember hearing Bob Melvin talk about his athleticism, and when he gets in the box, he's like a hurricane. In your mind, what was different last year with him where, you know, he didn't have a terrible year? Heck, he was the best outfielder in the National League, but there also something wasn't quite right. What do you think that was?
I believe it's rust. I mean, he missed over a year of baseball, and I don't care how talented you are, if you're not playing this game, it's going to take a little bit of time for you to get back to where you were. He's so talented that he still put up numbers that, you know, most people in this league would love to take home and say they accomplished over a course of the season, but he's not most people. So I said it last year when he came back, after watching how Ronald Acuna kind of progressed after coming back from that knee injury, I kind of put it into the same basket. You know, he was going to take a little bit of time, but once he got a full off season under his belt, I think the sky is the limit for Tatis.
Tell me where you think Manny Machado is now as he tries to work his way back from what was a frustrating year for him.
I think he's a little further along than most of us thought he would be at this point. I thought, when he had the surgery last year, I thought that at best case scenario, we'd have him as a DH, you know, a couple of weeks into the season. He's already throwing and he's already DHing in these spring training games. So my guess is he's most certainly going to be a DH by the time opening day comes by. He could very well play third base at that time. We'll have to wait and see. Hope that there's no regression, but He's been a far ahead of schedule, I think, in most people's eyes.
Give me a guy who's not talked about, because obviously the Padres are a team with some superstars. Guy who's not talked about that much, who's going to be absolutely vitally important for this team and could be a guy who could fill that role. And, you know, someone for me is Michael King, who threw so well for the Yankees down the stretch when they converted him to starter. For me, he's a crucial guy. What about for you?
I think that's probably the guy, and here's why. I ran through all of those names of what they would have to – what would have to happen in order for the Padres. Those are all offensive guys. I mentioned Joe and you at the end there, but if they get one of those type of years from a guy like Michael King, who they think very, very highly of and has looked good in his few outings here in spring training, that's a bonus piece right there, because anytime – you have guys who don't have a ton of experience in your rotation, and that's really going to be at least 3/5 of this rotation. You get good years out of those guys. You set yourself up to have a ton of success during the season.
Anthony, as you know, there was a lot of talk last year about the Padres' culture and clubhouse and did guys get along. What's your sense of where they are with all that as we start this spring?
I mean, I think culture, and Mike Schilt said this, the culture is kind of built over time, right? I mean, they want to establish some type of identity, but you kind of learn who you are when you're going through the trials and tribulations, right, of a season. So I think it's ongoing, but I personally think having a guy like Mike Schilt at the helm, who is very attention-oriented, attention to detail, oriented, it's something I think this ball club needed. Didn't have enough of it last year. And I think right now all signs point to the Padres moving in the right direction from that standpoint. So I think over time that culture and that identity will be established, but I think they're on the right path right now.
What are some examples of that? You made reference to sort of the detail-oriented preparation. What are some examples you might see this year?
Now, and I'll give you one, and it's not to say that they weren't doing this in the past, but it stood out to me yesterday walking in the backfields. I happened to watch Ha-Sung Kim and Jake Cronenworth's round of BP, and every round, Victor Rodriguez, the hitting coach, was giving them a situation. And it was detailed to the point of extra innings. I think Jake Cronenworth countered with, are we home or away? You know, it's those type of details that I think, and small things that the Padres didn't do very well. And you can see that in their record in one-run games last year. Those are just kind of the small things that I think they're paying a little bit more attention to this year.
All right, Anthony. Well, I appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this. I look forward to seeing you early in the season. We got you a couple times on Sunday Night Baseball.
Thanks for having me, Bus. Just looking forward to seeing you as well.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Used with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Bob Kendrick is the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Missouri. Bob, how you doing?
Buster, I'm great, man. It's good to catch up with you. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Well, I just got done talking with Anthony Gwynn. I was texting you before. You know, I have this thing because I covered Tony, and Anthony was 10, 11 years old. He's popping around the clubhouse, and Tony would always call him Anthony. And so when the rest of the world calls him Tony Gwynn Jr., I just tell him, I'm like, I'm sorry. I am not going to cross your dad, right? Your dad, I can't imagine your dad ever being annoyed with me. So I got to call you Anthony, and he laughs. Tell me, did you ever get a chance to meet Tony?
On several different occasions, and it was always very special. Two memorable moments for me, obviously, 1995. No, I'm not exactly sure what year. Whatever the year it was that the All-Star Game was in Boston. And Buck and I, Buck O'Neill, myself, we're all in Boston, and we're staying at a hotel. And somehow or another, people kept mistaking me for Tony Gwynn. They kept coming up, Mr. Gwynn, Mr. Gwynn, can I have your autograph? And I'm like, I'm not Mr. Gwynn. And then finally, Buster, I said, okay, I'm Mr. Gwynn. Let me sign for you. So some poor guy got a Tony Gwynn autograph signed by Bob Kendrick because they kept confusing us. But I think the time that I remember the most, 2012, when Kansas City hosted the All-Star Game. And outside of what happened at Kauffman Stadium, the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum was the star of the All-Star Game. We started the weekend off with Sharon Robertson here at the museum within a conversation and children's program. The very next day, I had Henry Aaron and Frank Robinson in a conversation hosted by Dave Winfield, as you can imagine, was incredible. And the very next day, my good friend Joe Posnanski sat down with the great Lou Brock, and we had a conversation on the art of base stealing. And then the next day, we sat down with Tony Gwynn on the art of hitting. And man, you talk about something that was special. To hear this man dissect hitting was absolutely incredible. And of course, for him to pay his first visit to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, as you could well imagine, meant a great deal to him, because it certainly was not lost that he stood on the shoulders of these immortal giants to pursue his Major League Baseball career and to become one of, if not the greatest hitter this sport has ever seen. And so that was very, very special to have that conversation with Tony in the confines of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And as you can well imagine, people were just, they were glued to every word that came out of his mouth. And that's something that I will remember, again, as my mother would say, as long as I'm in my natural mind.
Well, and he and Buck O'Neill shared this particular trait. And I say this as someone who covered Tony for years, and I've always thought of it as a gift that I got to cover him as a young beat reporter. He loved to talk baseball. Like, he shared. He loved to share. And he got it that if he could make an idiot like me understand what he was trying to do at the plate, you know, hopefully I could translate that fans would understand better in what he did. But he'd be out there at 1:30 in the afternoon. As you remember, he has short legs. He wasn't that tall. He had short legs, and he would sit on the bench at Jack Murphy, and he'd swing his legs like a little kid in a high chair, like that, right? And I think you'll remember this too. He had a soft handshake, and I told Jose Altuve that his handshake was a lot like Tony's. I think Tony was to protect his hand. So I'm,
absolutely,
I'm glad you got a chance to meet him and to sign his autograph. He had a beautiful autograph. I hope you did it justice.
Yeah, no, I don't know if I did or not, but some poor guy walking around thinking he got a Tony Gwynn autograph, and it's autographed by Bob Kendrick for Tony Gwynn.
Oh, man. All right. Well, last week, this is kind of what got in my mind that I wanted to talk to you. Ryan Howard, the longtime first baseman for the Philadelphia Phillies, led a group that presented players an invitation to the June 20th Major League Baseball game at Rickwood Field, being headlined in tribute to the Negro Leagues. Tell me what you know about that and about how much you're looking forward to that on June 20th.
Oh, man, I can't wait. Buster, I'm so excited about this event. This, I believe, will be a seminal moment for Negro Leagues history, as the eyes of the world will be squarely on Rickwood Field there in Birmingham for this pseudo Field of Dreams game that's in salute to the Negro Leagues. And I just got to tip my cap to Major League Baseball, because when they did those Field of Dreams games there in Dyersville, Iowa, it captured the hearts and the imaginations of a lot of baseball fans who instantly reached out to me wondering if and when Major League Baseball would do a similar tribute to the Negro Leagues. And baseball clearly listened. And we were very thrilled to be part of the planning process to get this game to come to fruition, and can't wait for June 20th. And if folks did not see the video of Ryan Howard going to personally deliver invitations for some of those Negro League players, there are a number of Negro League players who are still there in that Birmingham area. And of course, Ryan has ties to Birmingham, and he's been very close to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum for quite some time. Ryan Howard, Buster, was coming to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum before we ever knew who Ryan Howard was. He wasn't Ryan Howard home run champion or Ryan Howard MVP. He was just a youngster at that time in the Phillies organization. And he would come here really on an annual basis and walk through this museum. And I really believe, Buster, that in many ways, it was his rites of passage. I think he came here and immersed himself here, fully understanding whatever the challenges of spring training might bring him, it wouldn't even compare to what those who paved the way for him had to endure to play the game that they love. And he never stopped coming. He never stopped coming, and we've been very fortunate to have a great relationship with Ryan. And to see him deliver those invites Man, you don't even realize what that is, what that did for those Negro League players. He may have added 2-3 more years to their lives with a simple gesture like that. And I tell folks, if you watch this video, and if this doesn't give you chicken skin, man, you might need to check your pulse because you might be dead.
And Ryan has a huge heart. Like, you feel that when you talk to him. And, you know, I remember meeting him when he was a young player with the Phillies before, as you say, he was Ryan Howard, MVP. And I was like, this is someone with a lot of heart.
Yeah, no, man, he really has. I'll never forget, we first met Ryan, believe it or not, in San Diego at Petco Field. And we're out there, Buck and I, for an event that Dave Winfield was hosting. He would host an annual salute to the Negro Leagues. And Jimmy, we had a relationship with Jimmy already. And so Jimmy sees Buck and he brings this big young man over to meet Buck. And when Jimmy introduced him, he introduced him and said, "Buck, I want to introduce you to the left-handed Josh Gibson." And Buck looks at him, and I think Ryan was a little bit embarrassed by that comparison. And Buck looked at him. He said, "Son, don't be embarrassed about your power. You keep swinging that bat." And he kept swinging that bat. And so for him to be able to do that really meant the world to those players. It means the world to me and the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, because it came from a true place of genuineness. This is who he is. And he understands that his legacy is so deeply entrenched in the Negro Leagues. And so that was very, very special.
You are part of the preparation for that June 20th event. Tell me about some of the things you're doing.
Well, we're still kind of filling out some of the things. I just know I'm going to be there running around, running my mouth. We're going down next week with Harold Reynolds to do some pre-promotional stuff for the game. And, you know, Buster, we're all hoping and praying that the greatest living Major League Baseball player, who just also happens to be the greatest living Negro Leagues baseball player, guy that you probably heard his name before, Willie Mays, will be healthy enough to be there. I mean, it gives me goosebumps thinking about the possibility. And even if his health won't allow him to travel, the fact that this game is being dedicated to him, a place that his storied career began as a 17-year-old kid patrolling center field for the Birmingham Black Barons. And if I told you then that this little kid, this black kid from Birmingham, would become widely regarded as the greatest major leaguer of all time, you'd have said, "I'm crazy." Uh-huh. And people said the same thing about so many of the other players in the Negro Leagues. He represents that entire group of folks. There was so much talent in this league. And Major League Baseball got a handful of the young stars that came out of that league. But it ties this all together. It is the bond that ties that transition from the Negro Leagues to Major League Baseball and the impact that the Negro Leagues had on Major League Baseball. And this game, I think, will beautifully make that connection, which is why we're so excited about this. Baseball has done a tremendous job of joining the museum and helping generate, I think, an unprecedented level of awareness of the Negro Leagues, you know, through its partnership with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, through the announcement in December of 2020 of its recognition of the Negro Leagues as a major league, and rolling the stats of the Negro Leagues into the annals of major league history. And now a game like this game that's taking place at Rick Wood, because as I remind folks, the game in Dyersville was based on a movie, or as I like to say, it was R-E-E-L. Rick Wood Field is R-E-A-L. It is real. Rick Wood was the place that so much of this history, and if those walls could talk, man, the star power that went through there as it is related to the Negro Leagues is tremendous. And so this will be, I think, a very triumphant day for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, for Negro Leagues history, and really for baseball fans worldwide.
All right, before we got started, I told you I was going to throw you a curveball, as I like to do with you, to give you a name of a player and to tell me a story about it. But what I didn't know was that it was a hanging curveball, because that player, and I have it on my notes here, okay? And Sean will back me up on this. In the notes I sent him, Willie Mays. Tell me your favorite story about Willie Mays, because you were sitting on this.
Oh, man, you did give me a hanging curve. And so I think my favorite story, and I actually heard the story from Mr. Mays himself, and I think the story has been fairly well documented, but I'm out in San Francisco a few years ago, and I'd gotten invited out by one of the big sports talk show hosts, Brian Murphy. So Murph was my host, and there was a memorial service going on at the ballpark, and Willie and Barry Bonds and a whole bunch of guys were there in attendance. And he arranges for me to have some private time with Mr. Mays. So we're in the player's garage.
Wow.
And Mr. Mays is feeling pretty good this day. And so Murph asked him, he said, Willie, did you ever face Satchel Paige? Oh, Buster, Willie lights up like a Christmas tree. And as you all know, Mr. Mays has somewhat of a high-pitched voice. And he says, yeah, I faced Satchel when I was 17 years old. The first time I faced Satchel, I got a double off of it. Well, Satchel threw young Willie Mays some little off-speed pitch. He hits it in the gap, gets a double. Satchel looks over at the third baseman and says, hey, man, you let me know when he gets back up. Couple innings later, here comes young Willie Mays back in the batter's box. The third baseman said, hey, Satch, there he is. Satch said, son, I ain't going to try to trick you. I'm going to throw you three fastballs. And Mr. Mays saying to himself, you going to throw me three fastballs? He said he threw three straight right by me. I never saw him. And on the third pitch, Satchel is walking off the mound toward home plate. And Mr. May says, as I turn to go back to the dugout, Satchel stands there and says, now go sit down, little boy. And here is arguably the greatest major leaguer of all time, simply delighting, remembering being struck out by Satchel Paige, which tells you how great Satchel Paige was.
What a great question. What a great question. That's one of those ones that Willie wouldn't have necessarily volunteered that, but it's the question, you know, you tap into that vein in that memory. That's outstanding. All right. Before you go, you mentioned before we started, you're looking forward to the next rollout of MLB The Show 24, which I'm very familiar with because as I, you know, complain to Boog Shambi all the time, who's of course the narrator. He does all the narration for it. My son plays that game all the time. And so I got to listen to Boog all the time.
So between Boog and Bob Kendrick, man, you can't get away from us. Because the Negro Leagues mode is called storylines. And in the storyline mode, I am narrating stories about the players who are in the game. And yep. Of course, we debuted this last year with Sony PlayStation, and Buster, the reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. It has been one of the biggest things that this museum has ever done, a video game. Because again, the challenge for a museum, and particularly a history museum, and even more so a cultural institution like the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, is how do we make history relevant? Yeah, it can't just be history for history's sake. Our kids are too savvy for that. And I can't wait for them to come to me. I have to go to them, and I have to go to them in the modes and mediums in which they are accustomed to getting their information. And so this video game has done just that. And they are not just learning about the Negro Leagues. They are falling in love with these stories and these players from the Negro Leagues. So again, last year we debuted the game with 8 Negro League players that I told their backstories and other vignettes about facts related to the Negro Leagues. This year, 10 players will be introduced. The first 4 have already been announced, and they came out swinging because you got Josh Gibson and Buck Leonard, known as the Thunder Twins, who were teammates there for the Homestead Grays for so many years. The great Henry Aaron, my all-time favorite Major League Baseball player and my childhood idol, is in the game, but he's in the game as a member of the Indianapolis Clowns. Yeah, 1952.
Yep.
And he came to the Clowns as a skinny, cross-handed hitting shortstop. So yes, folks, Mr. Aaron, who was a right-hand hitter, came to the Clowns with hitting with his left hand on top. And as we know, that is unorthodox. The fear is that you break your wrist hitting in that manner. Henry Aaron is knocking the cover off the baseball in a highly unorthodox fashion. When it gets to the Clowns, they put the right hand on top, and the rest, as they say, is history. He was shortly after discovered by the Boston Braves, who would become the Milwaukee Braves, who, of course, would become the Atlanta Braves. But it all began in 1952 with the Indianapolis Clowns. And so he's in the game. And then the first woman to ever be in the video game, Toni Stone. Toni Stone, y'all, would take the roster place of Henry Aaron. She was one of three pioneering women who called the Negro Leagues home, along with Mamie Peanut Johnson and Connie Morgan. All three starred for the Indianapolis Clowns, although Toni would play briefly at the end of her career for Buck O'Neill and the Kansas City Monarchs. So you can see that this game is already capturing the imaginations of the gaming community already, and that's before the other six players are revealed who will be part of this game in 2024. And old Bob is back there telling stories about all of them again. The impact has been amazing. I tell this story all the time. Last summer, I was taking a group of potential investors. You know, Buster, we're working on an effort to try and bring expansion Major League Baseball to Nashville. And of course, I like to speak these things into existence. When we're successful, the team would be called the Nashville Stars after the old Negro Leagues team. And so I'm taking them through the museum, and we get out on the field of legends where all the life-size statues of Negro League greats are. I'm going through a litany of introductions of the players because they're all cast in position as if they were playing a game. Well, you know who's on the mound. None other than the legendary Leroy Satchel Paige. Yep. And so I'm telling my Satchel Paige stories. And for those who listen to your show who may not know, Satchel had names for his pitches. As a matter of fact, in the video game, he's the only player that doesn't throw fastball, curveball, changeup. They had the names for his pitches. So he had the Midnight Creeper. He had the Two Humper. He had the Bat Dodger. He had the Hesitation Pitch. He had the Long Tom, the Short Tom, the Jump Ball, the Trouble Ball, the Radio Ball, the Wobbly Ball, the Dipsy Do. And he also, Buster, had a pitch that he famously called his B-Ball. And I would always pose to my guest, do you know why he called it the B-Ball?
No.
And so when I raised the question, there was a young white kid, couldn't have been more than 9, 10 years old. He's with his dad. And he looks at me, Buster. He sticks out his chest. He raises his hand. He said, Mr. Kendrick, I know why Satchel called it the B-Ball. I said, you do? Well, tell the folks why he called it the B-Ball. He says, Satchel called it the B-Ball because Satchel says, it bees where I want it to be when I want it to be there. And I looked at him, I said, man, you must have been playing the show. And his dad looked at him, he says, yes, he's been playing the show, and he's been paying attention to the stories that you're sharing in the video game. It was absolutely priceless, because that's exactly what we hoped would happen.
Oh, you're the best. I'm going to ask my son about you. And I got another project for you about my son, related to my son, which I'll tell you another time. Thanks for doing this.
Man, Buster, anytime. It's great to see you as always.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 team preview. Houston Astros, machinations.
The Astros lost players known for their leadership. Catcher Martin Maldonado and outfielder Michael Brantley, and a lot of their bullpen depth. But they added one of the best left-handed relievers in MLB history in Josh Hader, and Joe Espada takes over from future Hall of Famer Dusty Baker as manager.
The weakest link.
The rotation has propelled the Astros to 7 straight division titles, but there are reasons for concern this March. Justin Verlander has been dealing with a shoulder issue that he does not consider to be major, but he's reached the age, 41, when you really can't assume anything. Framber Valdez lost his sinker late last season and needs to rediscover that pitch to be great again. And Christian Javier was just never the same in 2023 as he was in his dominant 2022. The Astros need that trio to lead their excellence.
A guy to watch.
We could say Kyle Tucker, who might be baseball's most underrated player, or Yiner Diaz, who's going to put up big numbers in his first season as the Astros' everyday catcher. But we'll go with Hader, who will be the primary closer working at the back end of games alongside Ryan Pressly. Last season, Hader faced 231 batters and allowed just 32 hits, striking out 85 for a 1.28 ERA.
Win projection.
Sarah Langs is very bullish on the Astros, pegging them for 94 wins this season. Paul Hemikiti says 94. Pakoda says 95.4. I think it'll be a little bit more of a grind than usual for the Astros. I've got them at 93.
Steve Sparks is the analyst on the Astros Radio Network and some play-by-play. How do you guys work that?
You know, I do the third, fourth, and seventh inning. You know, give Robert a break. That was the intent. It's kind of an old school approach, and when they hired us, the intent was to give Robert, you know, a couple of innings off, you know, talking all the time. It was the color guy that was going to take over the play-by-play, and literally they told me 3 days before I started this job 12 seasons ago that, hey, by the way, you're doing play-by-play, and I had no idea what I was doing.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine the fear. We've had a couple of instances where there was microphone issues in the booth or something happened in the booth on Sunday Night Baseball. And the producer's like, Buster, you're going to have to do play-by-play if there's an issue. And I've never been more afraid. So cap off to you. You know, tip of the cap to you for handling that well. All right. So the other day, we're talking about the 2024 Houston Astros, of course. The other day, I talked to Alex Bregman at length about the adjustments he made coming into this year, and I walked away from that basically telling all my friends who have rotisserie teams, take Alex Bregman. I feel like he's poised for a big year. What's your sense of Alex and where he is mentally right now?
You know what? He's never going to work harder than he already does. I mean, he can't work any harder, and he's so meticulous. You know him pretty well, Buster. I think there's a lot in him that feels the last couple of years, because he spent his offseason not as healthy as he would like, that he's poised, I believe, Buster, to have a great season just because he was healthy, he was able to swing, work on some things. You talked to him about the weighted bats. He feels like his bat speed is noticeably better. I've noticed it in his first few hacks in spring training games, and he's a little closer to the plate right now, and I like that approach for him because when he gets the ball in the air to the pull side, he hits a lot of homers.
The biggest question for me about the Astros, and you know better than I do, is the how good will their rotation be? It feels like there's a lot of potential variance. You know, Justin Verlander is going to go into the start of the year having come off some shoulder issues, and Framber Valdez was you know, has been so good over the last 4 or 5 years, really lost that sinker toward the end of last year. What's your sense of that group as we get ready to go?
Well, we can throw Christian Javier in there, too. So he's certainly a very important member of this rotation, thinking about what he was 2 years ago compared to last year. And I don't think the WBC did him any favors, but he was never really the same as what he was 2 years ago. And he looks great right now. Fromber, I've seen him throw some bullpens. I've seen him throw some lives against hitters. And I do see his two-seam fastball a little bit better than it was last year. Now, he had a negative degree launch angle against him a couple of seasons ago. And you're thinking, what? I mean, everybody beat the ball on the ground. You saw it. But last year, you know, it crept up to there close to 10 degrees. You know, and 10 degrees is a big difference from negative. And when you're able to, you know, get the ball in the air and drive the ball a little bit, they started to have some extra base hit potential against Fromber compared to the years past. And if he can get back to that, I mean, that's all he needs. He can almost tell people that he's throwing that two-seam fastball. It's like Brandon Webb was. It was just a naturally great moving pitch, but he lost the feel for it for just a little bit, and the book's out on whether or not he's able to regain that feel.
What are a couple other questions in your mind as we go into the year about the Astros?
It's probably one side of the bullpen. When you think about the top four relievers, and I'll go backwards, it's Hader, Pressly, Brian Abreu, and Rafael Montero, that's the games that you're winning. The games that you're losing or it's close, you're going to have to rely on some guys to log a lot of innings. And right now they're searching for guys. They lost Hector Neris, Ryan Stanek, and Phil Maton in free agency. And because of that, those three guys in particular, Buster, were Dusty Baker's lefties. You know, they all three got lefties out really well. So the candidates that they have now, and there's a dozen or so guys that they're trying to round out the rest of their bullpen. But those are important innings. You know, those are the types of games that you want to keep, you know, your main leverage relievers out of those games to keep them as fresh as possible when you're winning. And right now they're searching for players.
And a catcher, you know, potentially a big change. And Martin Maldonado, you know, is someone who has had a ton of respect within the pitching staff in recent years, being a catcher. He's gone now. Yainer Diaz is getting this job. And what I was hearing, you know, toward the end of last year was, boy, the front office really wants Diaz because they see the offensive potential. You know, 23 homers last year, 104 games. He hit .282. Tell me about him, because he's obviously going to be an important guy this year.
Yeah, offensively, I mean, the sky's the limit probably offensively for him, because you mentioned those numbers. Yeah, he did that in a spare role. And that's talking about somebody who doesn't really have a lot of rhythm and continuity at the plate. And he was able to put up those great numbers, power numbers too. He just needs to tighten up the strike zone a little bit. Defensively, he's really coming along very well. I mean, Victor Caratini was brought in, and he's going to be able to be kind of a tutor or a mentor for Yainer Diaz during the course of this season. But he swings the bat very well, too. So I think offensively, from that position alone, I think the Astros are going to benefit and score more runs, just because they're going to, you know, not really have, you know, that portion of the lineup be kind of a black hole situation. But it's going to be hard to replace Maldonado's leadership. That's the thing that you just wonder. Like, he was the main cog in that dugout. He kept the pitching staff together. He called the timeouts. He rallied guys. Would call a team meeting. Things of that nature. Guys are going to have to step up.
So they have a change of manager this year. Dusty Baker's out. Joe Espada is in. I thought right away the other day when we learned that Yordan Alvarez is going to hit second in that lineup. I was like, oh, okay, that's a different philosophy than Dusty had. Tell me other ways that it's going to be different with Joe.
Otherwise, it's pretty seamless. I think he's going to be more aggressive. I think just by nature, I think Joe Espada is a little more aggressive. So I think he's going to push guys to press themselves to try to take extra bases and things of that nature. And the other part, just because Joe, he was an infielder, understands, I think, the little nuances of the running game, I think he's paying particularly close attention to the pitchers doing a better job of getting the ball to the catcher, giving the catcher a chance to throw some guys out. The Astros were below average at that, let's say, last year. So, you know, preventing runs, trying to figure out ways to maybe manipulate the lineup a little bit to get Yordan Alvarez, as you mentioned, a few more at bats, things of that nature. He's looking for every advantage.
All right, Sparksy, good to talk with you, and I will see you in camp within the next couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it, Buster. Take care, man.
Bleacher Tweets.
Hey, everybody. We've really been enjoying all the messages, Bleacher Tweets, voicemails that you've been leaving, Buster. And this week, we're going to kick it off with Corey.
Hey, this is Corey Rukert from Charleston, South Carolina. Longtime Bleacher Tweeter. First time calling in. My question is, who are a few starting pitching bounce-back candidates for the year? It seems like Sale and Javier are shoo-ins for that. Thanks.
Yeah, and I think Carlos Rodon would be another one. And Corey, thanks for calling in. Yeah, Chun, you don't know this, but Corey has been like, it feels like, I mean, if we had a leaderboard for Bleacher Tweets, he would be among the leaders. he's outstanding. But I think Carlos Rodon is one person to watch. It feels like he's on a mission. It's too bad about Alek Manoah. We also got word in recent days that he's dealing with some sort of a shoulder issue, and he's someone who needs a good launch to the start of the season. So that's kind of a bummer.
All right, and here's our next one.
Hey, Buster. This is Josh Atkins from Columbus, Ohio. Long-time listener, big-time Reds fan. And the longer the spring goes on, Joey Votto doesn't have a job. I'm thinking he'd be more open to maybe a player coach's role. When was the last player coach's role where you had Pete Rose as manager in the Phillies as also a player?
Wow. That's an interesting question. So I don't know off the top of my head. And if you're talking about player coach, you mean player manager, because that, you know, Pete Rose would have been that. Frank Robinson was that. I remember, you know, at the end of his career when he was with Cleveland. Joey could definitely be that type of person on a team. You know, I'm going to be curious from Joey's perspective, if at some point I think it would behoove him to just invite teams in and say, hey, come watch me work out. I mean, you heard him the other day, Sean. He's got a lot of confidence and he's a smart guy. And I think he's a very honest self-evaluator. And if Joey Votto is telling me, you know what, I think I'm pretty good right now. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling healthy for the first time. He's so dang smart. I want to at least go and watch that guy work out. And I hope that's what he does. And because to me, he deserves another chance.
And here's the next one.
Hey, Buster. This is John from Maryland. I am a big Orioles fan. Actually, been a big fan of your podcast. Listened to every episode last year. My question is, the Orioles finished the first week of spring training 7-1. Does that mean anything? And how does one interpret spring training records as they translate into the regular season? Keep up the great work. Thanks.
John, thank you for the kind words. Look, I think in individual situations, it can mean absolutely nothing. And I generally speaking, when you talk with executives, they don't really pay attention to it. But I do think there's circumstances that, you know, having a good spring training can be important. I think of a team like the St. Louis Cardinals, right? Had a very disappointing year last year. And if they were to, you know, roll through the end of spring training this year, I think that's got some value. I think that if a team, you know, rolls into the year with some expectations that they're going to step it up, you think about the Yankees, for example, they were disappointing last year. They're going to want to perform well. If a player has a down year last year, they're going to want to perform well in spring training. They're going to want to start getting positive results. So I would say this, though, the Orioles are good enough where I don't think it really matters. If they went 3-17, I don't think we'd look at that and say they're in trouble. If they went 17-3, I don't think that necessarily matters. I think they're going to be good either way. I do think they should add a starting pitcher. I mean, I've said that. I think Blake Snell would be a perfect guy for the Orioles in their current situation.
And that wraps up all the Bleacher Tweets and voice messages for us this week. If you're interested in leaving a question and message for Buster, you can tweet us or call our number at 406-404-8460.
So, Sean, while we were taping today, we got word that Josh Donaldson, a former MVP, has decided to retire. He, of course, has been holding out the possibility that he could find a job someplace. But no, Josh is going to hang him up. And I did want to say something about Chris Mortensen. If you paid attention at all, social media or ESPN, he is rightly getting so many kudos from people. You know, so many people talking about how great he was to work with. And I will echo that. And I'm not going to pretend that I was close with Mort, but you know, he was a big baseball fan. And, you know, occasionally I'd bump into him when I was doing SportsCenter or other shows. And he always had questions about baseball. And there were times he'd send me an email because he used to be a baseball reporter, a really great one back in the mid 80s. He'd send me a note saying, hey, I'm hearing that so-and-so is going to happen. You might want to check it out. Hey, I'm hearing this is going down. And that, you know, was part of the reason why he was such a great teammate. I really enjoyed talking with him. And I mean, I know people in our company are so sad today about his loss. Well, that's it for today. My thanks today to Anthony Gwynn, to Bob Kendrick, to Steve Sparks, to Sarah Langs, to Dave Schoenfield. It was a fun show today. And thanks to you, Sean. Thanks for rolling with all my crap.
As always, Buster, me and you, we're in it, bro.
There we go. Have a great day. Again, thanks for listening. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.